Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keys are here with you on this Tuesday morning. Belmont basketball back at it tonight, taking on Bradley, 6:30 at the Curb Event Center. And to help us talk more about that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Belmont men's basketball coach, Casey Alexander. Casey, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'm great, and I hope you guys are.
Oh, we are. Appreciate you. You got to watch out for Rex Road. A lot of things going on in Rex Road's world right now.
Head wound, Harry.
Yeah. Casey, I want to start with the win against Evansville the other day. I saw an interview you did with Steve Lehman after the game, talking about how you guys are 7-1 in games decided by 5 points or fewer. And I'm just curious, why do you think that is? Why do you think your group has been so good in tight games? Is it just the poise they show? Is it great coaching? How would you answer that question?
I wouldn't claim it as great coaching. I think great coaching would be 7-1 and double figure wins as opposed to small margin wins. But you know what? I think we got off to a good start this year, winning some games early in the season. And I think it's just carried over. Along with that, though, I think we do have some really good playmakers and guys that can get us a bucket when we have to have it down the stretch. So it's a combination of those two things. You know, and those things don't really even out. People tend to think that, well, you win some, you lose some. I think it's a little bit deeper conversation than that.
So, Casey, huge one against Bradley, and you've got them twice here in a couple weeks. So obviously those are critical games. I mean, right now there's a little separation, it seems, but maybe you don't see it this way, but you guys, Bradley and Drake, and of course you lost to Drake on the road. Don't get them at home this year. It's a tough break in the schedule. But first of all, just how big is this game? What about the matchup? And do you see it that way? Do you look at it like you're right there with either of those two as a team that could ultimately end up emerging from this conference?
Well, I look at it that way. If we can start winning some of these, you know, the Drake game was not our best. They're really good. They had, I think, a 28-game winning streak at home when we played them that has since been extinguished. But Bradley's is in that group. They will remain in that group. And so this is a really good test for us. You know, they're an extraordinarily good team on both ends of the floor. I think they're seventh in the country in effective field goal percentage on the offensive end, which is a tall order for us. Defense is not our strength, but we're excited about the opportunity. And definitely, I mean, if it's a game where, hey, if we do win it, then we're tied for first. So I guess we have to start putting ourselves in the thought of that conversation.
So Casey, as you look at the conference this year, your impressions on the Missouri Valley Conference as a whole, and just the journey for your group so far to this point, what have you learned about your group to this point in the year?
Well, we're like a lot of leagues in a sense that we have 5 new coaches. There's a ton of transfers. The vast majority of our returning all-conference guys transferred high major. And so there was a lot to figure out early. But the Valley is built for success. It's still the 11th best league in the country out of 32. And it's a really tough place to win. That Evansville game being a good example of that. They're a team that's been in the bottom of the league, but they've been super competitive and they're really hard to beat at home. And so that's just the way that it's going to be. I don't think any of us are so overwhelmingly good, kind of the Indiana State of last year where they were kind of playing at a different level. So a lot can happen between now and March, and definitely a lot at Arch Madness when we head to St. Louis for the tournament.
So, Casey, you guys are 23rd in tempo, and I know, you know, look, efficient, up-tempo offensive basketball has been Belmont basketball for a long time, but I'm wondering if that's a little bit of an uptick for you guys, and then also the balance scoring across your lineup, maybe a little deeper in terms of, you know, guys, like you said, who can get you a bucket as opposed to being top-heavy in terms of top scorers. Are those two things – in your mind, you know, significantly different this year?
Tempo is not significantly different. I'd say we're, you know, more times than not, we're going to be in the top 25 on the offensive end, which is really the only part of that that you can control. We do like to play fast. We play with a lot of freedom, not a lot of set plays. And so that's the reason for our tempo. The distributions of scoring, that's just kind of happened organically. You know, we lost We lost our three all-conference players from last year and all five starters. So when the year started, we didn't know where our buckets were going to come from. But Jonathan Pierre has emerged as a really good, talented, versatile player. Carter Witt has been extraordinarily good as a point guard. And then we've had some other guys that have had big games. And I like it better this way. I like it when on any given night we're going to have three or four guys that can get us mid-teens or 20.
Well, you bring up Carter Witt there, Casey, and obviously the distribution of the ball at that position really important. But his ability to score and to go get you a bucket, how valuable has that been for your group?
Yeah, it's been really valuable, and it's increased as the season has gone on, and especially here lately. I think over his last five games, he's averaging 17 or 18 a game, and you combine that with 4 to 5 assists a game. That's a heavy dose of your offense right there, and no better place to get that from than your point guard. He's settled us down. I think he's probably the most dependable guy as far as production goes that we have. I think he's going to be really consistent moving forward. So really, really glad and fortunate that part of our portal process worked out as well as it did.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, obviously, the scenario you just laid out for us, not ideal. That's tough. It's pretty amazing that you guys are performing like that when you have those kinds of losses. I know the Valley has been pillaged a lot, but do you feel like you have a better handle on just sort of the process of roster reconstruction each year than maybe even a couple years ago?
Well, we're farther along. I think you have to be really cautious about it because just when you think you're starting to figure it out, things change and you're dealing with a completely new set of circumstances. But what we've learned with this particular team that we have now, when I think back to working through the portal last spring, it was really more important than ever to us that we get guys that fit how we play and who we are. And that has sustained us. There was a level of experience that came along with that, and you combine all those things, and it really allowed us to cut our losses quickly and kind of move on with a new team that's capable of winning 20 games again.
So Casey Brigham-Rogers, 16 points, 8 rebounds against Evansville. What has he brought to your group this season, and just in terms of his level of play, being a threat to score, but also the ability to rebound the ball and control the game that way?
Yeah, his emergence lately has been another key part of our success. We've won 5 in a row, and he's had the lion's share to do with that, along with Carter, as I just mentioned. Brigham he was really just a minutes eater and a big body that played hard and gave us some physicality. But here in the last 5 games, he too has, he's probably averaging 14 or 15 a game, maybe 7 or 8 rebounds a game. He's off the charts with offensive rebounding, and some of that was completely by necessity. Drew Sharnowski, who is our other big at that position, has largely been unavailable for the last 3 weeks. And so Brigham had to rise to the level of the occasion, and he definitely did.
So along the lines of that, of the scoring distribution, Casey, and again, you guys have been a very good shooting program, many good teams, but 6 guys with in the 20s or more hitting threes, the lowest percentage among them, 32%. I've got to think that this is for you even a little bit more than you're used to in terms of having threats on the outside. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's how we've always wanted to build our roster. But you never really know how things are going to play out. For example, last year we had Tyson Gillespie and Dia. All 3 of those guys averaged in the 16, 17 points per game range and were all conference players, and everybody else was just kind of don't screw it up role player. And that team was good. It won 20 games and we had some success, but the distribution and multiple guys that can get it is always better for our offense. We've traditionally been a high assist, very efficient offensive team that scores a lot of points, and the biggest reason for that has always been because we have multiple guys that can make shots. So the more the merrier, to say the least.
Oh, Belmont taking on Bradley tonight at 6:30 at the Curb Event Center. Casey Alexander, our guest. Casey, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate you taking some time to join us this morning. Good luck tonight, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, guys. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Casey Alexander, Belmont men's basketball coach, our guest here on the program. We'll get back into the Titans coming to next. Take more of your thoughts. Got some of your thoughts on the quarterback front to get to. We'll do that as well. The Titans have hired a new special teams coach, so we'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Appreciate Casey Alexander for being with us in the last segment. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Joe, lots of different thoughts on the quarterback discussion that we had on Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, including, as Steve Lehman brought up, Will Howard at 7:30. Some people not a fan of the Will Howard stuff on the text line, Joe Rex. What are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, is that right? Yeah, look.
He's certainly not going to be the number one pick. I think we know that.
No. Will Howard is – I mean, to me, Will Howard made himself draftable. And when I say draftable, I mean, like, I'd say fourth, fifth round, something like that. But, again, that's a jump from what I thought going to the playoff. I mean, I didn't – just like – I mean, like, I think you did see last night – I think a lot of people have compared Howard and Riley Leonard. Obviously, you know, we've had a lot of time to build up to the national championship game, and they're both three-star recruits. They're both good running quarterbacks, you know, who aren't necessarily great passers. I think you saw last night, you know, Will Howard can spin it. Riley Leonard is a quarterback draw guy who every once in a while makes a throw. You know, yep. It's actually amazing that Notre Dame got to within, you know, they were in a one score game to win the national championship with Riley Leonard at quarterback. He's not in any way a pro prospect. I think that Will Howard and his catalog of throws that he showed in this four game stretch is going to help him. And here's another thing, Robbie, you know, someone on the text line earlier, I think Robert was like, well, if you didn't think Jaden Daniels was awesome a year ago, then your opinion means nothing. And my point was, well, I mean, I didn't think he would be this, but also if we're going to go by who's wrong on quarterbacks, then nobody's opinion, media, fans, GMs, coaches, means anything, because we're all dead wrong so often. But a year ago, I would have laughed if you told me that Bo Nix is going in the first round and that Bo Nix is going to be in contention for rookie of the year, right? Laughed at it. Laughed loudly at it. We made fun of Sean Payton when they drafted him.
We did.
They did. And there you go. So Will Howard is big, strong, he's athletic. And again, like the arm talent looked pretty good in this run. This season at times, I thought he was the thing that was holding them back.
Will on Music Row saying, what's a realistic win for next year? Can the team get to 500? Are we 3 years away? Is it more of a can Callahan and Brinker prove themselves? Better said, what is success for next year? Joe, I don't know that you're ever 3 years away in the NFL. Like, you shouldn't be. With the way that the rules are and the ability to turn your roster over so quickly, like, I don't think 3 years away from what, I guess, would be what I'm asking. Like, are you talking a Super Bowl championship, but like that's impossible to predict. But like, you should never be 3 years away from getting yourself to being competitive and competing for the playoffs ever in the NFL.
Exactly. There's every year, every single year in this league, I would be willing to bet if you went back 20 years and went through each season, you'd find a team that was bad the year before and the over under on wins was 4.5 or whatever, and they at least got to like 9-7, made the playoffs or something like that. It's built for that. So Titans fans should not have to wait 3 years for a competitive team. Now, a competitive like a contending team, well, yeah, who knows, you might wait 30. Okay,
that's the thing. That's hard to get to, but like, again, we've brought this example up. You know, 3 years ago, we were talking about the Titans losing in the divisional round to Cincinnati and the three interceptions that Ryan Tannehill threw. That was 3 years ago. So that shows you how quickly things can change in a three-year span. Like, it's pretty dramatically different now than it was back then.
Exactly. So, look, last offseason, let's say everything went well. Let's say Snead is a all pro level corner and Awuzie plays all year. and on and on and on. Go through the list. Nicholas Petit-Frere is actually just a serviceable lineman, which was not asking that much of him. And it's not asking that much of a third-round pick coached by one of the best offensive line coaches ever to be serviceable. And Levis, it takes to Callahan's coaching and careful with the ball, whatever. The 3-14 worst team in the league could have gone 10-7. I mean, again, I'm going through a long list of things, and yep, all of them went the other way, but those were still things that they tried to make possible in one off season.
Exactly. And look, who's to say they can't have a great off season this year? Like, if you get quarterback right, I'm not saying that they've got to be an all pro next year, but whether it's the veteran or drafting one of these guys, if you get quarterback right, if you can find a halfway decent edge rusher out there, if you can get some better play on the offensive line, like, how much of a difference does that make? And look, somebody's brought this up too. We were talking about the duress that Levis has been under. And I buy this to a certain degree. Not the whole thing, but I buy it to a certain degree. I mean, one texter says a lot of the duress from Levis was self-inflicted. The offensive line is not great, but Levis drifting in the pocket, getting off the midline during his drop back, as well as leaving a clean pocket into pressure, made it much worse for the offensive line too. Like, I don't think Levis helped there. So if you get a quarterback in here that is better at that and can move better in the pocket and is just has a better feel for playing the position at the NFL level, how much does that help? Again, I'm not saying the Titans are going from 3 wins to, in the divisional round of the playoffs next year, but you can make a pretty significant improvement from extremely awful in this league to decent. Like, that's not a very difficult jump to make in the NFL. Now, getting from awful to great is pretty hard.
Yeah, just get to decent. Everybody's supposed to be decent. That should be the expectation. Be decent. Again, to me, it's like in December, play games that matter and are games that can help you get to the playoffs. I mean, every team should – there's no excuse. There's an excuse for very few teams, and it's only the teams that are, rock bottom. I mean, I know you can say the Titans are rock bottom, but you could have an offseason that gets them to that. Absolutely, you could. As far as the Levis in the pocket, I agree. But I also watched Mason Rudolph play last year. I watched Ryan Tannehill play the last couple years. But yeah, just take last year. Mason Rudolph – it's not like Mason Rudolph – I mean, he has better pocket presence than Will Levis. But basically his solution was just get the ball out in 0.9 of a second.
Right.
And that's how you – let's not sugarcoat how bad the offensive line was. It deserves zero sugarcoating.
No, I agree. It's got to be it way better. And look, to that front, like, Skoronski got a lot better throughout the year. So that's a positive. I don't know what to make of Latham. Like, Latham, I think, has the traits to be a really good player. I think Latham, as the season went on, struggled more and more. That was just kind of my read on it. So what does that mean? How does that kind of line up for him next year? Like, I still have hope that he can be a pretty darn good player for them. But, is Latham going to be a franchise-level foundational left tackle, which is what you drafted him to be? I don't know. Like, I'm not saying he's not going to be, but, it wasn't – the path for him was not linear this year. I guess I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I agree. But I think the tangibles are there. The intangibles are there. And it's no excuse at all, but, you're J.C. Latham, and you're used to playing at Alabama – and now you're playing more football than you've ever played in your life, and it's totally meaningless football. I mean, again, not an excuse, but I do think sometimes there's a culture shock for people, especially when they come from a great program into a brutal franchise, and it's just a slog to the end. So I think he's gonna be fine. I think he's gonna be very good. I think it's fair to look at it, depending on who you could acquire, and at least talk about whether he might be better on the right side. But at this point, I would still expect that they just look at him as the left tackle. He's obviously got to take a big step next year.
More of your thoughts on the Titans to get to coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Sponsored by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Joe Rexroad's got a question for Vols fans coming up here in a few minutes, which we will get to in the aftermath of the national title game last night. Right now, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Adam in Portland. Adam, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Dude, has anybody made the comparison to Mike Borgonzi? Looks exactly like George Costanza when he had hair. Do you remember this?
I've not seen anybody make that comparison.
It's so good, dude. That's the first thing I thought. I figured somebody already told you that. So, all right, so I'm trying not to get too excited. Like, I want to stay level-headed because I remember thinking when we got ran, I'm like, the 49ers don't have a weak spot on that roster. So if he was responsible for that, I felt pretty good. And then you see what happened. So, like, you could break it down, and I've done it to, like, all right, is it Andy Reid? If you take Andy Reid off the Chiefs, are they still a winner the way they are? I don't think they win as much, but I think they're still pretty good because if you pluck Patrick Mahomes and put him over here, are we a good team? I think we'd be a good team. So I don't know. I would have to think that pulling the Chiefs, important Chiefs executive, and putting him in charge is a really big move for the Titans. So I like it. It's the first time I've been excited about the team in like 6 months, which is a start, right? Like, I'm not even – I just wanted somebody to lift the rock off my throat, you know? Like, this is a start. So hopefully he does something good. I'm pulling for him.
Yep. Thanks for the call, Adam. Appreciate it. Joe, a couple things. Number one, the still shot of Mike Borgonzi that I'm looking at right now, my God, does he look like George Costanza, and I'm never going to be able to unsee that. Number two, what do you make of what Adam just laid out there? I hear what he's saying. Like, look, I'm excited that the Titans hired Mike Borgonzi. Like, I thought they were going to go John Eric Sullivan. Not that I didn't think John Eric Sullivan couldn't do a good job, because I think he could, but the fact that they got Borgonzi, I think, is exciting, and I think Titans fans should be excited about it. Having said that, I mean, Rand Carthon did come from a successful organization that put together a really good roster that did a whole lot of winning, and it just did not translate here. So there's no guarantee that it translates here with Borgonzi either, even though that he has been around a team that was built through the draft to develop retain model and has done a whole lot of winning.
Yeah, man. So do we have to start calling him assistant to the traveling secretary instead of assistant to the regional manager?
Maybe so.
We have to consider that. Also, does this mean the Titans are going to go to all cotton uniforms?
Yes.
I hope everybody gets that reference. You know, the thing is, it's kind of like the converse. Is it the converse of we've talked today on the show, Robbie, about the, you know, like, basically, if you want to feel optimistic, you could, if you want to put like all but a little bit of the blame pie on the plate of Will Levis, you know, then you can talk yourself into more optimism about things moving forward. On the flip side of that, you could take Borgonzi and all these guys over there and say, yeah, well, they all jumped on the Patrick Mahomes gravy train and toot toot and all look like geniuses, you know? I mean, you could look at it that way too. Now, I don't necessarily subscribe to that, because again, the reason I think that the Chiefs are where they are with a very pedestrian offense this year is the fact that they have a great defense and they've done a lot to build and replenish that side of the ball. But still, Mahomes finds a way to win so many games that are toss-up games. And it's just, and you know, in his brief time here, Will Levis, there were some games that the Titans win last year. If you just take away, you know, one killer play or two from him in some of those games, right?
Are you saying the Titans would have won more games this past year with Mahomes at quarterback than they would have with Will Levis?
You know, I'm cautious with my takes, but I think I will go ahead and put that one out there.
That's good. I'm glad we nailed that one down. Yeah. Let's head back to our 102.5 The Game phone line. Welcome in Cam to the program. Cam, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, fellas. Good morning. So, number one, I'm just going to throw this because, you know, it is Titan atmosphere. Has anybody checked to make sure that's not just a dryer sheet on his head? Because that could be a dryer sheet, and he called out of work and couldn't make it into work. I'm just saying, the first thing I saw when I got, because I'm watching it on the YouTube, and I'm telling you, that looks like a dryer sheet.
So Rex Road is just a total sell job this morning.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm closing in on the camera for you.
So I was listening to this as it was all unraveling, and I asked Jared this yesterday, and Jared was stumped. You can go back and watch it. He literally said, Kevin, that's a good question. I really don't know the answer. So I listened to this all day yesterday and or all day Friday, and it was, well, he wouldn't take this job if he didn't have commanding lead. He knows what it's like, this, that, and the other. But then Chad Rithrow came on in the fourth hour and said, but what if he just took it because it pays better and it has a better title? And I'm 33 years old. I've taken a better job, even though it wasn't a better job with a company, just because it did pay better. Yeah. And it was a better title. But in all actuality, they just took the janitor title off the placard off the closet, and they put the GM placard on the same closet. And they said, hey, this is your office now. And what if everybody in the room, family, friends, relatives, are saying, hey, you're going to be the gopher. You're going to be the gopher. This is how the Titans do it. Once it's over, you'll be the gopher. You'll be the general of football operations.
Yeah.
You'll be the gopher. You just have to wait it out and let everybody else fall off. It's like a sitcom. It's like you just have to wait for everybody else to die.
Well, that's the way that things have operated around here lately.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now you're the gopher. And when you're the gopher, then you can do everything you want to do it. And I just want Jared said yesterday it was a good question, and he couldn't give me an explanation. So I'm with Chad Rithrow. I'm kind of just wanting to know what you guys think about it.
Yep, thanks for the call, Cam. I appreciate it. Well, Joe, look, I can't get inside Mike Borgonzi's head. I don't know. I can't tell you every reason why he would take the job. I will say this. You know, we talked about the piece at SI.com yesterday that Albert Breer put out there, in which he says that Borgonzi has final say on the roster. Like, I don't think that Albert Breer is just pulling that out of thin air. Now, having said that, we talked for the last couple weeks about how Chad Brinker has final say, and Chad Brinker has talked about having final say. So I don't know what all that means. Like, what sort of semantics are we getting into with the final say part of this? There's been more discussion about final say around here over the last couple of years than any franchise I can ever remember. But that's just the way that it's gone. I don't know why Mike Borgonzi took the job. I don't know if it's as simple as you get the GM title and the pay raise, and that's a good enough reason. I do know this, Joe. The aftermath of the hiring, a lot of people were talking about Mike Borgonzi was going to be a legitimate candidate moving forward for general manager jobs. So I don't think he just took the first job available to him for the sake of taking the job. I could be wrong about that. That's just my guess.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's like he was going to, like, some people take these jobs and they weren't necessarily going to get a job. It seems like he was going to get one. So again, in this league, you try to build up to that. That's when you make your big money. That's when you get your big shot. And if you can sustain it and get to that second contract, you know, so we talk about players getting the second contract. John Robinson got that second contract, still living on that sweet Amy money right now, man.
Yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, you get that, you know, you have some success, and obviously you can set your family up, you know, for generations. I mean, so it's a huge deal to get to this point. I still would think that you would want to go someplace where you can sustain it, where you feel like it's not going to be, where you don't have necessarily an owner who has been scattershot all over the place with decisions lately. That's where, not to mention just the haziness about the power structure. As for the Breer story, absolutely. Breer is a great reporter. He's got good sourcing, which tells me that the Titans are talking out of both sides of their mouth, which is exactly on brand for the Titans.
Yep. 615.
It's just exactly what they do, and it's incredible, but they keep doing it.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts to get to on the Titans. Plus, Rex Rhode, with a dryer sheet on his head, has questions for Vols fans in the aftermath of the national title game last night. We'll get to all that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Rhode, 1025-1063, the game. Final segment of the day, Robbie and Rex Rhode, 1025-1063, the game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines. If you missed any of the interviews today, Alex Doherty from the Tennessean, Steve Lehman from News Channel 5, Casey Alexander from Belmont Men's Basketball. Check it out, Robbie and Rex Rhode, wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, thegamenashville.com. They will be up for your listening pleasure. Joe Rexroth, in the aftermath of the national title game last night, in which Ohio State wins against Notre Dame, you have a question for Vols fans that you'd like to throw out there.
Well, I just wanted to know if Vols fans feel better at all because the team that waxed you ended up waxing everyone and going on to win it all. I know that was a very disappointing night. I do see some early preseason polls that have Tennessee in the top 10. And so I think that's exciting. I'm with you, Robbie. I think that there's some roster questions.
They still got a lot of work team. Too.
Yeah. But look, you got Nico coming back. And even though this wasn't the year everyone hoped for from him, I think obviously Vols fans were hoping he'd have a year where it's like, oh, that dude is going high in the next draft. That, I wouldn't say that yet. I think we still saw enough from him and enough growth later in the year to think that with some better help around him, which is where your point comes in, he could be really good next year.
My answer to that is twofold. Do I feel better about losing to Ohio State after watching what they did to everybody else? Yes, I do. I also know that if you eventually want to win a national championship, like that's the level you got to get to. So right. how close are you to that would be the question. Now, I think the Ohio State team this year was a little bit of an extreme example. I mean, you're talking about a $20 million roster, but that's what college football is now, Joe. Like that's you're accruing as much talent as possible. And like Jeremiah Smith isn't going anywhere. And look, some of it's matchup driven, right? Like if Tennessee doesn't play Ohio State in the first round of the playoff, what happens? Like are they more competitive with Penn State? I mean, heck, are they more competitive with Oregon? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. But clearly Ohio State was the best team. So it's twofold. I feel better about the loss to Ohio State given the fact that they dismantled pretty much everybody else. But if you're going to win a championship, like that's a level you got to get to. And I still think there's a ways to go for Tennessee before they get to that.
Yeah. Well, to answer your question, I think Tennessee could have beaten Penn State, could have beaten Oregon, and really could have beaten the version of Ohio State we saw most of the year. You know, it's just – this was one of those – it was like – I mean, I think that there's something, too, like the Michigan loss changing them for the better. But
– I mean, if the tournament was seeded properly, Tennessee would have played like SMU in the first round. But I digress.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's something to look at for next year. But, you know, like you said, $20 million roster – and it's not just that, right? I mean, Ohio State has been a machine. And so they also like they get some recruits that have something to do also with just like you expect to go there to play for national championships, yep. You know? I mean, the money's going to a lot of these guys are going to get paid similar high amounts of money in a lot of places. But I do think that for Tennessee, they just put out a press release on their another record-breaking budget year.
Yeah.
Everything is off the charts and donations, all the things like that. Like when it comes to resources and being able to have $20 million rosters, I think Tennessee's right there. So it's a matter of making good choices. And then at some point, it also comes down to coaching, right? Where is this offense from 2022 that was just so mesmerizing to watch? You know, two straight years now that it just – on a lot of fronts, just was not up to par, even as the defense got to a point where that's a defense. If you have that offense, you are now a national championship contender. Where has that offense gone? How can they get it back?
Well, by the way, it doesn't look like they're making a change there. Like we talked in the aftermath of the offseason about, like, do you look at Joey Halsley as OC and consider making a change? I mean, they hadn't played in a month, and there's been nothing on that. So I would assume that their staff is – coming back next year fully intact, and then you have to see if you can – look, I would be stunned if you're hypo looking at this. We've talked about this. You don't change the whole thing. You don't change the offense entirely. But I think you'd be crazy not to look at it and say, do we not have to make some tweaks here? Like, to me, it all comes back to the tempo thing. If you're going to run tempo. But if you're not going to do it, then it takes a big part of the effectiveness of the offense – out of play if you're not doing that.
100%. Absolutely. So this year to me is a big prove it year for Halsley, but also for Heupel on just, you know, you've had enough time to have offensive linemen develop in your program. receivers developing your program, and a lot of those guys have come and gone. And so it's this is a year that Nico needs to be great, and the offense needs to get back to playing with tempo and being one of the better offenses in the game. And if not, then to me, you start to wonder if, okay, it's just kind of cycled down. Teams have figured it out to a point. Slash Golish continues to deserve more credit than he got at the door, whatever it is. This is a huge prove it year for that offense, for that side of the ball.
I agree. Hey, you know, Matthew Nashville talking about it's Heupel's play calling. He needs a Ben Johnson or an Alex Golish again. Maybe. I get that. Maybe. I mean, the thing is, like, Heupel has been the play caller in this offense, you know, both at Tennessee and before he got to Tennessee, where it's been really effective. Like, Heupel was a play caller at Missouri, and it was really, really good. Like, it's so, like, I think Heupel can call plays at a high level. Just why has it looked so disjointed, particularly in the passing game, the last couple of years? That's what they got to get figured out.
Right. And look, they have to have more of a difference-making player on the outside.
Yep.
They've had that in the backfield, but they have to have more of that on the outside, and they have to, if you can't at this point in this amount of time building a program, start churning out some offensive linemen who should be all SEC level, should be NFL prospects, then you got a real problem somewhere in your process there at offensive line.
Just need to call Dolly Parton, Bill Haslam, tell them to pony up, get a $25 million roster in there, see how it goes.
I mean, it's worth a shot, man. Why not?
Nate Bargatze, who's a Vanderbilt fan, who's not going to donate. I'm just trying to think of all the people who have a lot of money around here.
Yeah, Bargonzi and Bargatze are occupied with stuff in Nashville. So
they are. Bargatze's worried about Vanderbilt's NIL. That's going to do it for us today.
Bargonzi, Bargatze, and Kaharski, the law firm of Brentwood.
That's going to do it for us today. Jason Big Joe is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game.